These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you've got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
And welcome to Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in and hunkering down ahead of this ice storm that we're expected to get a little bit later. How is this for poetic justice or maybe salt in the wound? I'm not sure. More and more malls across the country are closing, right? And the way the real estate owners are turning some or bringing in some money is to rent them out to Amazon to use it as storage space. So here you've got these malls drummed out of business by online retailers now housing online retail merchandise. We will talk about that a little bit later in the program with Erica Pandy from Axios. But we start on Tuesdays with John Najarian from CNBC and, of course, the Najarian Family Office. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Stephen.
All right. So, you know, if you look at the CNBC today, you look at MarketWatch, the headline across all the business stories is this analysis from Goldman Sachs saying that if you weren't in the market for the January bump, you probably are out for the year. What do you make of that? Have we had our increases for you?
Well, it could be that we finished right around here. This was my prediction in December, was that we would see a gain of between 8 and 10%. Now, that was before, of course, the Fed chairman got as dovish as he just got in his most recent conference. So I think we could actually go higher, but the question is, do you want to chase it here after this run or wait for a little bit more of a pullback? And I think most people would wait for a little bit more of a pullback.
So we're going to end up maybe where we are right now, but we're going to go up and down before the end of the year.
That's my feeling. But I think the real million or billion or trillion dollar question is, which stocks do you own? Do you just buy the broad market? And if you're somebody that just buys the broad market, then maybe you do indeed take off the rest of the year and just kind of say, hey, it's been a great year. Why do I need to push it? We're up 7.5% or 8%, and that's plenty if you're in the broad market. But if you're in individual stocks, I think you can do a lot better than that.
You mentioned the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, was at the White House for dinner last night, right? He and the president had dinner. I don't know how typical
yes,
that was. I mean, what do you make of that?
I think it was shrewd on both gentlemen's parts to, in the case of President Trump, sort of bury the hatchet in the case of the Fed chairman to be the bigger man and basically say, look, I know you were critical of my policies, but I'm going to do what I have to do based on what I see. And based on the release of what they discussed this morning, the release was this morning of what they discussed last night, nothing indicates that the Fed chairman was caving into the president at all. And instead, he is going to be his own man and continue to run the Fed as he sees best for all the rest of us.
I was reading an article today about the State of the Union and how the markets react on the day after the State of the Union. And I didn't really see a pattern. I don't know if the people putting it together were trying to formulate one, but I know that after President Trump's first speech to the joint session of Congress, it wasn't technically a State of the Union, there was a big jump, like 2.4%. Less so last year. I don't know. Does the State of the Union move the market at all?
There are certainly some big stocks in there that we trade every day. One of them, Chicago-based Boeing, that's both defense contractor as well as commercial aerospace. And that one certainly could move both the transportation sector as well as the Dow Jones and the markets, because it's so big, just hit a new all-time high today. So I think people are anticipating the Fed continuing to speak positive. The president speaking about the economy, the growth of the economy worldwide in terms of sales, and that's really Boeing because they are the biggest. That's bigger than Apple, bigger than anybody in terms of the dollar value of sales that they have internationally.
Boeing doing well today. You mentioned ADM, another local company, is having a rough day.
Yeah, Archer Daniels Midland. There are some of these companies that are still, I think, relative values. Archer Daniels Midland falls into that category. for me. ConAgra would be another that would fall into that category, because I don't believe they've run too far too fast. Some of these others have made what looked to be, if you just stop the clock on December 31st, you'd say, oh my gosh, look at these incredible performances, 20%, 17%, or whatever. But that was after a 30 or 40% right, drawdown right. that they had from October through December.
So the stock market up today, the Dow's up 67 points, NASDAQ 16. This is a reflection of earnings reports or anything else?
Yes. Good, strong earnings reports and a bit more optimism, not just from the Fed, but about the consumer spending remains strong. Look at the Ralph Lauren numbers.
I know. We're gonna...
The Estee Lauder numbers. Both of them imply a pretty strong consumer.
I was just going to say, we're going to look good when we go out on Saturday, John. Estee Lauder and Ralph Lauren both doing
yes, sir.
Really well today. All right, what are you watching? What's your suggestion for us?
I had a spinoff from the Trib back in the day. It's cars.com.
Yeah.
You might remember that an awful lot of properties were registered by the Chicago Tribune, and a lot of those became very popular web purchase sites, and this is certainly one of them. It advertises automobiles, and it's its own company now. It trades under the symbol CARS, and we were buying that one for customers today.
I'm pretty sure I'm friends with a couple of people who used to voice their commercials years ago, so I know that company very well. John,
fantastic.
Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it, John. We'll do it again next week, okay?
Thank you, Stephen.
John Najarian. Follow him on Twitter, at John Najarian. Of course, watch the halftime report on CNBC. John does that every morning from 11 to noon. And before he takes off his Estee Lauder makeup, joins us on Tuesdays at noon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. The show is produced by Bennett Wakenight, and it's a good thing because he saves me more times than you guys have any idea. In the studio right now is Jim Davis, who, got a number of things going on, but we'll start with Nutrier High School. You are the staff and student wellness director. Jim, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Happy to be here, absolutely.
What does that mean to be the staff and student wellness director?
It means a whole lot of things. I'm glad you asked, because I think...
There are a lot of you out there?
In this position?
Yeah.
There are not. Yeah. I'm incredibly lucky to work at a super high caliber place who saw a need in this realm and brought me in to do it. I actually, the short version of the story is I worked at Nutrier High School. I was the first strength and conditioning coordinator at the school. And in that position, not only did we serve athletes, but we started to invent initiatives around the school. I then jumped up and went off to Harvard for a graduate degree.
Harvard, Illinois?
Harvard University, Cambridge.
Okay. I've heard both of them, yeah.
Both great places,
yeah.
Different for their own reasons.
Right.
But went out to Cambridge, and while I was out there, I had been in conversation with the school before I had left, and essentially said, this is what I think I will be ready to do upon return if the position, if we can essentially create a position.
Right,
and
right.
It's, again, a wonderful place, and they allowed for that opportunity.
And so then I would imagine from that work or from that experience, you've formed the Good Athlete Project in a way, right? And explain for me what the Good Athlete Project is.
Yeah, it does come out of the work at Nutrier. That's very much my on-the-front understanding of this realm. So the Good Athlete Project is an education consulting foundation. So we're a nonprofit organization working in the education space, although that said, that's where we started, was teams and schools. Now we've moved to organizations and individuals.
Oh, you have?
So
you moved outside school?
We have a little bit. That's where the heart of it is and will always be. But yeah, we will essentially help people. Yes,
but
sir.
Give me the what it is, because it's kind of a hard thing for me to grasp.
It is. It's so right. It is a concept, essentially, and it is. We mirror the similar initiatives. Okay, so that it's more like a think tank or a movement. It's education consulting, short version. But the big idea is it's an umbrella concept, the Good Athlete Project. We want to enter the space where motivation is at a very high level, where there's all these really unique contributions to education. And I hate to use the word hijack,
yeah.
But we want to jump right into that space.
To grab the energy in a way.
To grab the energy and point it in the right direction. Because, I'll give you a little bit of the background. I was sitting in a neuroscience classroom at Harvard University, and that sounds cool to say now that I'm a little bit removed, but I'm 4 weeks deep into that experience.
Hey, if it was me, that would be every sentence I
every
utter.
Every sentence.
So, yeah, go ahead.
That's right. Fair enough. So I'm 4 weeks deep. I'm in a class. My professor was Todd Rose, wonderful guy. And we start going over the attention and retention networks of the brain. So if we were to design the ideal learning environment, what would that include? And, okay, I've got my own specific filter. I played 18 seasons of football. I'm a coach. I'm a teacher, all that stuff. But we started essentially naming things that are omnipresent in athletics. We talk about novelty. We talk about goal-oriented behavior, powerful models, and all these things. I'm like, holy cow, that's sports. But the secondary recognition was we don't always use it to its full potential. So mm-hmm. there's incredible power in sports and backed through research and social theory and things like that. But where are we going with it? Sports gone wrong. I mean, dude,
absolutely.
It's a daily headline.
Right, right. So then when you go into a school, whether it's in Ireland or here in the United States or overseas, are you going into their athletic department? Or are you going into their academic office, or where are you going?
We usually are brought in through sports.
Okay.
More and more we're being brought in to bolster an existing physical education curriculum. And there, that's what I'm really excited about, because now we're talking about touching every part of the school. We're talking about administration. We're talking about how kids learn and how that could be supplemented through movement and nutrition.
So the kid sleep. Who goes through your program, goes through a school that mm-hmm. where your program is, when he or when she's done, what did she come out with that her cousin in Iowa didn't get?
Habits that actually matter and lend themselves to performance in a very real way. So it's kind of interesting that you said that. That's a good point, and it's completely contextualized. So like what we do on the north side of Chicago is different than what we do on the south side of Chicago, which is far different than what's going on in Boston or Haiti, obviously.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons that sometimes the idea is a complex one and difficult to talk about is because we're one of the first in the space to individualize as much as possible within our bandwidth.
We got to run, but how big are you? How many schools?
Oh, I thought you were talking about height and weight.
No.
We have, I believe last year we hit 1,800 individuals.
Okay.
And we're growing pretty quickly.
And the name of the project is The Good Athlete. Where do people find more information?
The Good Athlete Project. I think we are most engaged on Instagram and Twitter at, it's Coach the number 4 Kindness. So Coach for Kindness. GoodAthleteProject.com. Or you can find me, Jim, at goodathleteproject.com.
Jim Davis, great to talk to you. Let's check
glad
back in again, okay? I want to follow this. Sounds
happy
good.
Happy to.
Thanks very much, Eric Rungsty. Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. All right, we were talking a little bit there earlier about the Good Athlete Project, how they would go into high-end schools and help develop students there. We're going to switch gears in a way, maybe not switch gears, but move to a different highway. The Field Foundation and the McCormick Foundation, MacArthur, I should say, announced a couple of joint projects today, I think in total of $5 million in grants that will go to amplify voices in the city of Chicago. On the phone line now is Angelique Powers. She's the president of the Field Foundation. Angelique, well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me about the two projects, and tell me first in general about this idea of nurturing, I was going to say new voices. It's not maybe, they're not new voices, but they're maybe unheard voices.
I think that's well put. It's not a surprise when people talk about Chicago, they talk about the tale of two cities. And often what they're referencing is the south and west sides of Chicago that have historic disinvestment. And yet there are these visionary leaders that live and work in these organizations across that area that are making great changes, but as you said, are often unheard voices. And so MacArthur Foundation and the Field Foundation, we've been planning for almost a year now on ways that we could try to change that. So we launched two programs today, as you mentioned. Over 3 years, there'll be $5 million in commitment that will go out to individuals, which is unusual in and of itself.
Right.
And also, we have a new program that focuses on media and storytelling.
I want to talk about each of them, but first of all, I want to understand a little bit better or get your view of why these voices are unheard. I mean, here I sit at a major media company. Are we not paying enough attention? Do they not have the wherewithal to or the megaphones to be heard? Or why is it that they're unrecognized?
Well, first of all, let's start by acknowledging that journalism itself is under attack. And so a lot of during this time where journalism is changing, social media is on the rise and people are getting their news in different ways, and the institution itself is often called into question, unfairly so, I would say, the institution of journalism is in the midst of redefining itself. And what often folks of color feel is that stories about communities of color are told on behalf of communities of color, right, but not authored by them. And so really what we're trying to do is take advantage of this reinvention of media, and that's why storytelling is a part of it, which are documentaries and podcasts.
Yeah, tell me about that. So there's two programs. We'll talk about the new leaders in a minute, but the second is this media and storytelling program. Explain that for me.
Sure. So media is really looking at all different forms of journalism and the activity of gathering and assessing and creating and presenting news and information. We see storytelling as complementary, and it's the act of creating fact-based stories across different mediums. So, as I mentioned, podcasts, documentaries, there are a lot of artists that are using visual storytelling to compel change. We believe that these stories create narrative change, which eventually creates policy change.
So you're going to be giving these storytellers, finding these storytellers, giving them money. How will they use the money, and how will that amplify things?
So in the media and storytelling grant program, these grants will go to nonprofit organizations that are working on stories of Chicago by Chicagoans, primarily on the South and West Side, although we will fund collaborations between corporate media and quote-unquote ethnic media. We will fund artists, whether they're in a media organization or in a cultural organization, that are all working toward changing the idea of what Chicago is about, what the solutions are to our problems, and who gets to be the storyteller.
You know, just talking with the Good Athlete Project in the first half hour, and they were about developing talent, developing leaders. The Field Foundation, MacArthur Foundation, and these two programs are not about developing so much as identifying and amplifying, right?
Exactly. I would say we have a leadership investment area of our funding, and we intentionally don't talk about developing leaders, although that's incredibly important, as is the work of the organization that was on earlier. But we believe that leaders are already leaders. They just aren't recognized.
And so this new leaders program will help recognize them, right? Leaders for a New Chicago. And that does involve direct grants to the people as well as their organization.
Exactly. So it's a $50,000 award. $25,000 goes directly to the individual to use in the way that he or she desires, sees fit. And then we match that with a $25,000 grant to the nonprofit that is affiliated with them. What this allows is, one, because these are folks that are warriors for justice in many cases, we know that if we gave them $25,000, they would give it to the organization.
Right, right.
So this allows them to actually use the funds unrestricted for the things that they need the most.
Angelique Powers, the president of the Field Foundation, two new grant programs announced today. Angelique, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer. Because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. If you caught the big game last weekend, one of the commercials was a Bud Light commercial that made a very vocal point that they don't brew their beer with corn syrup. But now a lot of corn farmers are pretty upset about them portraying the corn syrup as a bad thing. Look, we don't need to get into the deep health details about what it is, what it does for you, and all that stuff, but it's like anything. In moderation, it's probably fine for you. But over the years, corn syrup has been portrayed as villainous for our health. So I think it's safe to say we all need to take a step back and breathe. And we can focus on Valentine's Day and know that the Valentine's Day candy hearts are going to be around this year. The company Necco was the original maker of the candy hearts, but they went out of business, and suburban-based Ferrara Candy Company is picking up the slack to make the hearts for all of the sweet little Valentine's notes that will be gracing us soon. Oh, wait, what? No one actually likes those candy hearts? Oh, well, I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute. We'll
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, I mentioned just a couple of moments ago that when it comes to malls, the U.S. is all over 20 times the annual, or I should say the average space for around the world. There are 20 times as many mall square footage areas. I'm fumbling that, but we got a lot of malls in this country. And we're getting fewer and fewer, though, because they're kind of fading away. Erica Pandy is on the phone line. She's a reporter at Axios. Erica, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I was falling all over myself there, but the point is we've got 20 times the amount of mall square footage in this country than is the world average. We loved right. our malls, but we're falling out of love with those malls.
Exactly. We have way overbuilt malls here in the country. We have 28 square feet per capita, like you said, 20 times more than the world average. And, you know, a report from Credit Suisse last year kind of shook people in their boots when they said a quarter of the 1,000 malls that are open today are going to be closing down in the next 5 years. But when you think about it, a lot of that is not because of this death of physical retail. It's just simply because the malls have been overbuilt. And so, yeah, it's happening all over the place, especially some of these malls that are already losing tenants and they look like ghost towns. They're just disappearing, and other stuff is coming in their place.
Interesting point then you just made. It's not just being done in by online shopping, which is what we like to think, or maybe the easy way of thinking, but the fact is that they've done themselves in by building too many of them.
Exactly. There's just nobody needs that many malls, and especially now, you know, more people are moving into cities. They like that sort of Main Street feel of going from shop to shop more than just going into a big old box. So the model is getting outdated too, and we're finding.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, so we're finding that since 2016, 8 million square feet of essentially all malls have been turned into warehouses, some of them for e-commerce companies, which is just such a twist of the knife.
Right. So the stores or the malls that used to bring in shoppers are now hosting the products that are being purchased online that pretty much in some ways put them out of business.
Exactly.
Are you finding that this is happening everywhere? Is it happening in rich neighborhoods and poor neighborhoods? I mean, is there a geographic element to this story?
Definitely no geographic element, but the socioeconomic element is for sure there. It's all over the country, north, south, east, west, but definitely in the poorer or more rural areas where we have malls that are near lower income communities or that are far away from highways and other transit lines that just aren't getting enough foot traffic because people are strapped for cash or just aren't. You know, aren't able to drive there, those are the ones that are going.
Well, so I wonder, though, if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, if the malls are going to go anyway, at least they're finding a use for the space and it's not going vacant.
I think that's definitely true. I mean, at least the space isn't just lying there and it's being repurposed and that's efficient. But I think the worrying thing is that some of these lower income or more rural areas are seeing their retail options disappear, or at least there used to be that mall in the past. Now you're seeing nowhere to shop and just maybe a smattering of dollar stores or a local Walmart. And then, you know, the shopping options are just getting strangled away.
Yeah, the dollar store certainly is moving in and is everywhere. You know, around where I live, and we've talked about this on the show before, one of the things they're doing at a couple of malls is they're actually trying to make them apartment complexes, or they're building apartment complexes adjacent to the dwindling mall in order to revive it. Have you run into that?
Definitely. So there's kind of two routes that a mall goes. One, it's just completely defunct. It becomes a carcass of a building and then a warehouse or something else comes in. Two is the mall gets spruced up and it almost becomes like a mini town in and of itself. So you get a hotel in there, you get office space, you get apartment units. It's like a mall you never have to leave.
In a way, they're adapting into what's become popular, those little mini main streets around the country. They're trying to, as best they can, take that on.
Right, the sort of artificial downtown vibe.
Angelique Powers, Erica Pandy is a writer at Axios.com. Erica, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I'll split a pretzel with you next time I see you at the mall.